Hey teachers, hello and welcome back to the Talkcast, your home for inspiration, ideas, business, and teaching strategies to help support your teaching and grow your studio. My name is Sarah Buckley. I'm the marketing manager here at Top Music Co. and your host for the show. If this is your first time here, thank you so much for tuning in. You're listening to episode 240. Today's show notes and a full transcript are available at topmusic.co/episode240. In today's episode, I'm joined by Emily Laney, a fellow Top Music Co. team member, and we're discussing a business check-in for independent studio teachers. So whether you're a veteran teacher or just starting out, we're going to ask you some questions to have you thinking and considering how you can make your studio business the best fit possible for you. I'm so excited to be joined by Emily Laney. She's our integrator and content director at Top Music and a veteran teacher herself. Emily has enjoyed working in arts management, in marketing and PR, in addition to pursuing creative teaching. She volunteers in MTNA as club treasurer in her spare time.
Hi, and welcome to the show. I'm so excited to be here with Emily Laney. I'm Sarah Buckley. Today, we're talking about a business check-in for independent studio owners. And so this is for you if you're a teaching veteran, or if you're new, or if you're in the middle of your professional journey. My challenge for you today is to look closely at both your top priorities and your business. Take a few minutes to kick the tires and see how things are going, and maybe challenge yourself to think about what you could create. So I'm so excited to share some questions with you and hear some stories from Emily also as we move forward. My biggest question, and I think this is the first thing we should all ask, is what is a successful studio business?
Hey, Sarah, thanks for having me today. I think that can evolve over time. I think one of my colleagues said it should evolve. So take your original goals of why you got into teaching. And I tend to look at it in a 12-month snapshot. So I'll get to the end of my teaching year and I'll sit down with a coffee after the recital and I'll get my list out on paper and see what I accomplished, because I tend not to notice my own best success. I don't know why that is. We think about our students so much, and then we forget to look back and notice, wow, I really did nail that enrollment goal, or wow, my retention was so solid and it really lasted longer than I thought it did. So I tend to take the 12-month snapshot. And then I like to also put some bigger goals out that I don't think I can reach. And then I mark some progress. Sometimes I do it with coaches or in a coaching program. And lately I've just done it on my own. But like 2-year or 3-year picture. That way you're not just drifting through your teaching life, but you're going somewhere purposefully. Even if you have the ups and downs, I still think that's better and more successful, in my opinion, than just kind of floating along through a decade. What about you? What does it mean to you?
Oh, well, I want to take a second. I love that, Emily. I absolutely love that you sit there with your coffee and you have your kind of year in reflection after the recital. And that you have something that kind of marks that time. That's so awesome. I have to confess a little bit that I spent lots of years not looking. And then I think that's what brought me to having this kind of a check-in every year or two, the sort of thing. And I think you're completely right. The definition of success changes over time. And it's always going to change based on the context of your life, which I think is a huge advantage to being an independent studio owner, because as our lives change, we can change our business. So that's pretty awesome. And yeah, I think similarly, I probably start to think about it around this time of year toward the end of the school year and think about how might the fall look different, what's gone well. And you mentioned even some measurements there like retention and things like that, which I think is really good. And so I think those measurements of success are whatever is most of a priority to you at the time. But that's really, really good. Awesome.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, can I throw in a little story? I listened to a lot of our shows on this podcast show, and we had a guest on just recently, Will Bailey, and he actually teaches here in my home state, Texas. And he was talking about this also. He's a veteran teacher. He's taught forever. And he said, oh, there was years, he's got a lot of kids. So there's years where I was just trying to make the ends meet and just keep the books full of students. Like that certainly can be what a lot of us worry about, you know, success is, are my spots all full? But then he talked about something and it spoke to me. And it was, I think he said, I would have a couple of students that I was really proud of. And everybody else was bread and butter and just kind of paying the bills. And he's like, I knew that that really wasn't speaking to me as a teacher. And so he talked about his journey to transform that. I related so much to that. Because I think at a point you can get full and even hone your skills, but I think there's another level that is higher than that. What about you? Have you managed to get there? What is your higher level that you really, where have you gone beyond just being full?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I love that. And again, another good measurement is sometimes we're just at that place to, you know, fill the books, pay the bills. And then sometimes we're looking at that extra level. And I would agree, there's that sweet spot where you can tell that your students are really progressing and you're inspiring them, and you can see that impact that's a little bit more profound than the bread and butter type student. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's the kind of, the carrot's always moving on that one for me. I don't know if you find the same, like it's, you know, one year it's that I want my students to really be part of their journey and start taking initiative in what they choose and where they go. And then sometimes I want them like incorporating music in the rest of their life, you know, playing for their family more often or in the organizations that they're a part of, or, you know what I mean? So that's been lately some of the goals in my studio that have made it feel really rewarding and change the focus so that it doesn't feel like it's as much of filling the books and bread and butter, if that makes sense.
Yeah, gotcha. I like that. I went to a workshop once and Melody Bober was talking about like 10 or 20 ways to make your recitals more exciting than the usual. And She said something that stuck for me, going to your point about involving your community a little bit. And she said, I have a famous people recital like sometimes. And she said, I have everybody invite a famous guest along to play with them. And this is so much fun in my studio. She said, famous guest to my families means like someone important to them. So it's like my dad that plays and we're going to do a duet. Or someone that knows the mayor and they have an instrument the mayor plays. They'll invite them on stage during the recital. So she talked about making the recitals a lot more community driven that way. I love that.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I love that for sure. So I think things that teachers can think about, you know, as you're kicking your tires of your business, is that your business is a reflection of you. So as you continue to grow and learn and take on ideas from professional development and other teachers as you connect, that as you grow and change, your business is also going to grow and change. Like if I look back to what my teaching looked like when I started out versus 15 years ago and versus now, I see huge changes. And how about you, Emily? Like if you think about your studio and your teaching starting out versus now?
Oh yeah, for sure, Sarah. That's a great question. I think, you know what I like about that question is it already, just by asking, gives the permission that you should change and that's a good thing. And I think a lot of us, the go-to place is, let me find where the holes in the bucket are and plug them up, right? Maybe you're getting stronger on your makeup lessons, or you want to make sure you're not missing payments because of weak policies, that kind of thing. And maybe those are the low-hanging fruit that we fix first. But one of the changes that's actually felt the best to me is getting firm boundaries, but in just the ones that meant more freedom to me. Like I fixed makeup lessons through a series of coaching. I figured out a better way than makeup lessons. And that took that pain point off of the plate for me and my clients. And we stopped fighting about that. And now we're all getting along better. And it's so much happier. And I have a lot less emails to deal with. That's a thing.
I love that. Client boundaries is something I really want to talk about. So can you tell me a little bit more about what it was that was the issue before and then how it feels now? Like what changed for you?
Oh, sure. Well, I am a young mom and I have family that I, you know, every day at the end of lessons, I'm looking at the clock to, I've done my teaching day and I can't wait to get home and see my family. So a makeup lesson to me, that felt terrible because I did want to serve the client. I'm feeling their need to get them what they want, but it felt like it was taking, you know, a loss of my time to do that. And you might say yes, but if there's a win-lose in that, then it creates a bad feeling either on either side. Like if you're just saying no to makeups at all, and there's nothing good for the client, they resent you, right? But if you're the teacher and you're just giving up whatever your private time was, over time, you're mad. So, and I think that comes out, even if you're like very polite and don't own up to it, I think people sense it. So that's why it's worth it. It might take some bravery. It might take the willingness to change, but beneficial to the overall working relationship. Tell me more about boundaries. That's big for you. What does it mean to you? Where did you learn that?
Such a great question. Big nod to Wendy Stevens here. When I made a big shift from teaching at the University of Missouri to moving back home, I'm just north of Toronto now. And so starting up my independent studio again for the fifth time. And this was the only time that I'd had a full-time studio while being a mom. So same thing with that. The family balance was something that really brought the client boundaries into focus as an issue. Whereas I think before it was a little easier to brush past. Mm-hmm. And Wendy had some really great ideas. And one thing that really stuck with me was her comparison of the question about makeup lessons to Braxton Hicks. So,
okay.
I mean, it sounds so funny, but that's what made it so memorable, right? Was okay. that pregnant women always ask their OB, oh my goodness, like I'm feeling contractions. Are these Braxton Hicks? Even moms who it's not their first pregnancy. I did it with both of mine, like, right? And so she just said, what does the OB do? Does she say like, oh my goodness, stop asking me, right? No, she doesn't. She patiently and kindly says, no, you're all good. That's just Braxton Hicks. And so then what I realized was that's what's happening if there is any kind of anything that's unclear in the policy or parents forget, just like, you know, in that particular situation, people forget. If parents either forget what's expected or what's there for them available, they will ask. And it's not meant to be anything personal or it's not, you know, they're just looking for clarity there, right? But then there's also that opportunity for consistency. And so sometimes the same parent might ask for makeup three times in the same year,
oh,
right? And depending how you feel at the time, like, you know, sometimes I get a text about a makeup lesson, or this was a few years ago before I adjusted things, but I'd get a text mm-hmm. and I'd be super tired, super busy. And in the moment I just say, okay, sure. But later I'd be like, oh no. And so what I realized was having a really good one-liner, like you said, nice and kind, and making sure that there's value on both sides of the equation, having that patience, but also expecting the question. As soon as I did that, as soon as I expected the question about what happens when they miss a lesson, everything changed. And actually twice a year now with my students, I have a handout and it says, what do I do if I missed a lesson? And there's three options for them. And so we talk about the hypothetical missed lesson before it actually happens is so much easier. Mm-hmm. But then what I realized was when I did make a big change with existing clients, you know, it took them some time to get used to it. So I had to be consistent about enforcing the boundaries. And that's totally different than a policy on paper, because a policy on paper is great. But in the moment when the mom's texting about something that she's missing and she needs information, it's important to also have a process there. So, you know, I'm so sorry, Nick has a headache. I'll miss him. Let me know let him know I'm excited to see him next week. You know, and that's my sort of happy one-liner. And I remember a particular family and they're so lovely. And as I shifted my policy, they asked here and there a few times. And I think the third time she anticipated and was like, we'll miss you this week. Have a great week. Looking forward to next lesson. And that was like, yeah, there's a win, right? So then it was like that shift of like, okay, now it's clear on both sides and they know, you know, what's available to them or whatever. But I found expecting the question and having a process for it really helped with the enforcing part. And so for all of those pieces of our boundaries, I know it's not just missed lessons, but communication and things too.
I like that. Yes. Expecting that pushback and not being offended that it's there. That's beautiful. One of my coaches taught me, I'm not sure who to credit for this one liner. Don't promise when you're happy. Don't reply when you're mad. And don't reply when you're tired. Don't decide when you're tired. That's it. Yep. I go by that one for sure. When you were saying about, I am tired and I have to respond back to that text that came at the inconvenient time. That's one of my rules is I don't mind. I have permission to myself that I can always take 12 or 24 hours to get back to them. or if it's the middle of the weekend, I still feel fine if I'm getting back to them first thing Monday morning. And you do train your clients. So at first, they don't know what to expect, like the new ones, you know, they'll try you. I don't blame them. They just don't know. But people do learn. And I also think people appreciate when you do have firm boundaries, because then they know what to expect. I would, if somebody were to say that I keep a tight ship, I would think that was the ultimate compliment.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
Well, and you touched on something. You said they'll try you. And I have to share one more story. When I was, I think I was maybe like 18 or so, I was accompanying for a violin studio for their exams and recitals. And I was really intimidated because the teacher was, you know, so much more of a veteran teacher than I was. And so she was really nice. And she called me up and she said, okay, so what is your accompaniment rate? And so I quoted it and she goes, is that the lowest, like, is that the best rate you can give me? And I was green. And so I was like, I guess I can go lower. So we repeated that pattern. She goes, okay, is that the best rate you can give me? Yes. And so I went a little bit lower. And then she's like, is that the best rate? And I was like, yeah, that's bottom of the barrel.
Wow. I
was like, okay, great. And so, you know, I did the exam. And then a couple months later, she called me again. And this time I had felt like I had given in way too much at that point, but it was a good experience. You know, I was young and naive and whatever. And so then she called me again in the spring. So for many more students and a lot more to do. And I quoted my original rate and she goes, okay, is that the very best rate you can give me? And I said, yes. And then she goes, great. I always tell the parents I got them the best rate I could get. And I was like, oh, so that's just what she asks everyone. And if I had just said it and stuck to my guns, like that's all she wanted. She wasn't asking me to go lower. She was just making sure so that she could tell the parents that she'd given them the best. Right. And so understanding that, you know, that's those kind of boundary pushes happen, but it doesn't mean that you need to change. And that takes some practice, you know, I think getting used to being familiar with that and navigating it. I won't forget that experience.
That's a lesson you got to. When I get this, Sarah, I say, you know what? I bought myself a lesson.
Yeah, that's a great comment. Yes.
Wow. Can you talk about a time when you had a boundary that was difficult, that got challenged, and you had to learn something out of it?
Yeah.
Or I will, if you don't want to go.
Well, do you want to go first while I just sort of think through?
Oh, sure. Yeah, sometimes it's saying goodbye to good clients. In fact, I have one right now. I'm expecting a phone call any minute. And it's a schedule incompatibility. And you just have to get real clear and do a little soul searching ahead of those phone calls. And I've learned to actually build that space in. I do give myself 1 to 2 days. And I'm like, I think I know what I'm choosing, but I want to sit on this for a minute and make sure. That way, when you get to the phone call, and if it's a tough decision, it's like, sorry, I have sports and I don't have a spot in the schedule, then you can let them go with peace. I would say that particular kind of discussion or predicament, as long as you teach, you're always going to have that. It's just whether you can get yourself to a confident place. And one thing I did that was a mental shift that made all the difference is I stopped seeing an open lesson as a black hole. And it's easy to get there because you think next month, my finances is $200 shorter, right? You know, you do the math so fast. If you're an independent teacher, it's, you know, that's you're living on that money a lot of times. But if you'll shift into that thing of I may temporarily have the less cash, but I have the opportunity of the energy back, the time back, I might be easily able to find a dream client that's coming right up. I have room for them. So that gets kind of like woo-woo thinking a little bit, but it has made all the difference. If I can stick in that space, it's more of it comes from a generosity place to yourself. And I think to other people, just knowing that there is more for you ahead. It's not always about what did I just lose as the independent operator. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's taken me years. I don't know. I'm a slow learner, I guess, but
Well, yeah. I wouldn't say that, but I can definitely relate to that. I've certainly had that type of, you know, parting ways over schedule, sometimes even before the student signs up, right? Just, I don't have the time available where it means while I'm putting my kids to bed, you know, I could, but again, it's like with that violin teacher, it's like, nope, this is my, my fine line. Mm-hmm. And I've certainly felt that with a few boundaries, I would say, like with rate raises or schedule things like that, you know, where here comes a big change and mm-hmm. some families are just, you know, it's not the time. But I would say that a positive on that side too, is that in all of these areas, when we model the value on the studio time, the teaching time, the experience and the education, then mm-hmm. I find that the clients respond in kind. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I say things like the studio hours are Monday to Thursday, 3 to 6, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not saying anything about my personal schedule or things like that, then they know that they have to show up if they want to participate, you know? And so I found that as soon as I modeled that more strongly and more consistently, that's when my students actually started practicing more. My no-show rate went down to 0. And I found big changes there. So I think all of these things put together kind of can do that.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. And something I've heard that you say before that's shaped my thinking, Sarah, is having the importance of the investment and having the client invest in what they say their goal is, the lessons or any of the extras. What are your thoughts about that?
I like that a lot. You know, I definitely find that it's interesting because I read a comment online the other day about how people feel about the value of the arts and things like that. And I think that where people, when they see the value of music education and, you know, the music skills they get, as well as life skills and relationships and so on, when they see the value, then they invest not only money into tuition, but time. And so I really think there's a balance there in that investment where there's a sweet spot where people, obviously I feel that a client needs to feel like they're getting more value than they're paying for, because then they think it's a great deal. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's important that they see all the value that they're getting from their lessons and their experiences. But also I think like when they see that so clearly, then it becomes a consistent part of their habits in their daily life, getting to the piano or the parents communicating about practice or exams or performances, those sorts of things, because they don't want to miss it.
If that makes sense. Right. And do you define it as like a very black and white value system? Like, okay, on Monday at 4 o'clock until 4:30, your lesson, you know, that's your value. Your time of value is measured in minutes. And I think parents, I guess I'm asking from a parent point of view, they start there. They're measuring it.
They start there.
Literal count of lessons and length of lesson time and how low can I pay? And how do you,
I think so.
Yeah. How do you walk them down that path to go outside of time? Because there's more value there, but we have to let them know it's there, I think.
I totally agree. And actually, I think this is also a good topic for another episode, because I have a whole lot of ideas on that. But I think there's ways to communicate that, you know, when you first meet a client, but then I think there's ways to highlight it during the lesson and then during communications with the parents. So you're kind of weaving the value perception always. Mm-hmm. So they're noticing the life skills. Like I'm always telling my parents, like my studio parents, I call them my parents, but they're not, that, you know, oh my goodness, Emma showed so much grit today. It was really tough, but she just had so much determination and she got it, you know? And so really like kind of highlighting the life skills that they're learning and congratulating them throughout the season, you know, not waiting for a recital or an exam or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, quick text here and there. I think that kind of comes through sometimes in the conversation with a new parent. Like, obviously I think it's a lot easier with a veteran parent.
Right. Right. Do you have any kind of automated system? This sounds terrible, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Let's say you've got a big group of people and at a certain point you have to have a bit of a system or people fall through the cracks. So I am curious about this. Do you check a checklist and you're like, all right, I'm Monday, folks. Have I contacted the parents recently or not? Or is this more organic where you're just kind of checking in as you go and trying to loop everyone in?
This is a great question. Well, honestly, in the last year with on again, off again, online lessons, that has been a lot easier because I'm texting the parents a lot more. And personally, my studio is not so huge, so I don't have a system. And a good portion of my students are adults. And so I can say that to them when I see them, I don't have to, but so I don't have a system, but I'm at that breaking point where if I sign up anymore, I would totally need to have like a, a rubric of like, who have I talked to when? So no, not right now, but it's a good idea, you know, and you could, you know, I heard this great Tony Robbins presentation about addressing the human needs and how to make an experience feel addicting. And so I've reflected on how you can do that for piano lessons and for even the piano lesson families. Like, how can they feel that in all the events and the lessons so that all the different human needs are met? So that's, I think, something I would think on, like, have I done enough things that are a variety? Have I done enough things that are, that create certainty and draw them in that way? If that makes sense.
Yes, that's good. That's good. And okay, paint a picture for me. Let's go to the kid level for a minute. Can you tell me in the last week or month, has there been someone's lesson where they like literally hit the door flying on the way out? Have you had one of those recently? They were so into it and it was so their day. And what was that like? What did you do? And what do you think it might've meant to the student?
Oh, so exciting. Yeah, I did. A couple, actually. A few of my students are learning Shadows at Dusk in Piano Safari.
Yeah. I love that one. Yeah.
Yeah. The students love it too. And they always surprise themselves because it sounds so good and flashy and, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just the beginning of level two. So two students are playing that same piece and within the last week. And so we started with the patterns and the reading and whatever. And I gave them each a really specific goal for the next lesson. And they both just blew it out of the water, like came back with the whole thing hands together. And we had a group class last week. So then they're like, can I play it in group class? I'm like, it's kind of fresh, but okay. You know, so then they had another week to just like really get it, you know? And so then that was definitely a text to the parents of like, man, Ryan just blew it out of the water today. And like, then they're of course like so proud. So a lot of it is just like a lot of encouraging and, you know, and telling them that, man, that was impressive and underscoring exactly what they did that passed the goal line. And so I'll do that in the lesson. And then usually a follow-up text to the parents, you know, probably like two or three of those per week. And then, you know, that ends up naturally rotating.
Oh, that's so good. Shadows at Dusk. I do love that piece. Is that Julie Ner? So good.
How about you? Have you had any in the last week?
Yeah, I sure did. I had a seventh grade, eighth grade boy, and he's just been having a tough time in school life and wants to find what means a lot to him. And there's just, you know, they kind of grind their teeth as they're going through that process a little bit. And half the days might be a little grumpy days. And it's just, you remember being in middle school with them. But this has turned into his semester. We found this amazing piece and he said, I thought I knew all the 80s hit songs, but I didn't know that one. I found him a secret piece and he just loves it. He cannot wait to show it off. So awesome. Yeah, he that was one kid who just burst out the door at the end on Tuesday. Just kind of flew out the door and he's like, bye, see you later.
Aww.
Yeah, getting that kind of energy out of someone that's age 14, that's a big win.
Yeah, that is a huge win. Well done.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that definitely makes it worth it. You know, I think there's that old Mark Twain quote about I can live off of one good compliment for 6 months, you know, and I think that speaks to if you connect with something that really matters deeply to you, then all the rest of the run-of-the-mill teaching pressures and drain and energy. I think it's moments like that. If you're getting a regular flow of that, that's what makes the difference between burned out teacher and satisfied, tired teacher.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
I agree. And then that brings up another question. How are we doing all we can to create those moments as often as possible?
Oh, that's so good. Do you have thoughts about that? That's a deep question.
Yeah. Just kind of reflecting a little bit. I think that's something I might have to take away and think on. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right on that.
Well, Nick Ambrosino, I've always been a big fan, and we've tried to bring back some of his older archive podcasts to light and some articles to light because I'm a fan of his deep probing questions to teachers, really. He talks about the craft of teaching. And he is a big person to question, like, are you trying to foist off your will and your goals and your definition of good music onto all these students? And there's a bit of that. We do need to teach people the, you know, the fundamental skills. There's some shaping that goes along, but I think at a point, if you step back and allow the space to find out what kind of a learner and what kind of goals, that especially left of center goals. Like, do you have any of those? I have started to get a little radar, especially after being around Tim for a while. I've got this radar built in more because Tim talks about it so much, about noticing who's got these left of center goals. And like, I'm thinking of one kid, he has turned out to be a composer. And I am not naturally built that way. And that's not the way I grew up. And so I don't recognize it or relate to it straight on. And I kind of brushed it aside. I was like, he's just not one of my most successful students in our curriculum, right? And I could tell this kid was about to quit. This was maybe about 18 months ago. And we had maybe some tearful lessons once in a while. And, you know, as a teacher, that crushes you. You're like, oh, I'm failing. It's keeping you up at night. And I was right about the time I started to hear Tim talk about, hey, do you have a composer? Don't make them do anything else. Just let them compose for a while. They can only do that and that's fine. So I said, what the hey? He's probably going to quit anyway. I'm going to try that. So I had this one kid and we've done 18 months of this and it's amazing. He totally owns what he's doing right now. He composes and plays and he's got great chord skills we've built up. And his attitude about who he is as a musician has become like he owns it and I just support it instead of like dragging along someone behind you.
Yeah. I love that story. So from tearful to success.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad. Even if we stopped today and this is all we did, I know that he would continue on to define himself as like, I am a person that writes music. I've got skills. I have great ideas. I know how to develop them.
I love that.
Yeah.
And supporting that self-identity where like they identify as a musician or as a composer or as whatever it is. And you know, I love that. You're okay to stop because you know they're going to play for life.
Yeah.
So good. I certainly have quite a few students like that. I have one amazing student. Well, all of them are amazing, but I have this one really sweet, amazing student and he is very driven. He wants to be a film director. So he reads screenplays and I think he's 12 or 13. So he reads a lot of screenplays and he's really into movie scores. So he'll come in and we're talking about like orchestral texture and recordings and things like that. And so almost half our listening or half our lesson is listening. And then he's wanting to play. Basically, we're arranging orchestral reductions in his lesson. And then because he did a successful exam and he's a talented kid, you know, really great at subtlety. He just has an ear and everything. It just wasn't floating his boat anymore, you know? And so we did a huge pivot. And so now we mostly focus on a lot of movie scores and things like that. And we arrange them together and he's working on his ear and chords and harmony, that kind of stuff. And so it was very similar feeling where there was a time where I kind of expected that same call. And then, you know, now it's shifted. So different focus, but then sometimes, you know, he came in with a handle piece and he's like, well, now I want to learn this. Okay.
Oh, really? Wow. Oh yeah. You let his curiosity lead first.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll be honest, there were some times where I was like, oh, like, are we working on reading enough? Mm-hmm. You know, because I always had that little guilt underneath of being like, I don't know if he can read his music well enough, but then, you know, we'll pull out the staff paper and he's got to write some stuff down and it gets a little bit better, or he'll pull out a piece. I'm like, okay, well, again, maybe it's a bit of time spent away, but then circling back, we'll get there.
Well, I like that. Yeah. And it's helping them define themselves as who they are and who they are becoming. I think that's what, don't you think that this, it's a hobby, you know, that people have lots of hobbies. Music is one of them. And I think underneath these things, we are looking for something besides just something to do or even something we're good at. We're trying to define who we are in our hobby time, our free time. And parents, they want to provide that for their kids. That's why they're willing to put up actual money and time and all this, is they're hoping they can help their child to have expression, I think.
Absolutely.
As an adult student, even someone said that to me. I was taking from an artist in residence. And it's not the amount of literature that I learned that I think back on or the recital times that I went to. It would be the comments. She would say, you are an artist. You have the artistry. It's so beautiful. And that's what you take away and you think about way down the road.
Yeah, I agree. That's amazing. I think also that feeling when you can sit down and process things by playing, you know, there's been a lot of teen students that have checked in with their parents and kind of said, you know, when I was their age, I definitely played a lot if I was upset or whatever. And the mom would be like, oh yeah, I'll mention that, you know, mm-hmm. And the fact that then the parent has given the child this gift of something they can do, you know, when they're not feeling all that great, mm-hmm. that just gives them that time to express on their own.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
That's a good point. I was trying to think of, on the way over here to coming up to this podcast, I thought, well, a lot of us do similar things. And if you're trying to think about niche, that's like the buzzword right now, is define your niche, right? What kind of studio are you? And one thing I appreciate about our teacher community at large is, sure, we all do the same thing, but I find it really actually easy to differentiate. And when I look at my immediate colleagues around, I almost never go to that place like competitive, or you're just the same as me and I'm going to outcompete you on price. I don't struggle with that, because I instead see a lot of us, and I don't think I'm like faking it about this. I actually believe it's true. I think a lot of us are artists first, and we like to create just a space and just a nurturing space, I guess, for students. And everybody, that's going to look a little different. The ones that want to work with Sarah Buckley are going to be built a certain way, and they're comfortable with your style and scope and space and all of that. And that sets you apart so easily then from the next person over, because it's so personalized.
Absolutely. Yeah, well said, Emily. I agree. Well, just before we move past our boundaries discussion, there was one more thing I wanted to mention. You touched on it a little bit of sometimes being the rested teacher versus the burnt out teacher. And, you know, it made me think on, sometimes it's important to kind of notice as we're heading down the burnout path. Sometimes it happens before you know it. So it's something to think on. And I wanted to mention another boundary that I'd created in my studio. And I'm curious if you do something similar, Emily, but in my studio, about every 6 weeks, we do group class week. And where it's only groups, there's no private lessons at all. And we meet by age, not by level. It's a lot like how we used to have master classes in university music study. Mm-hmm. And that was another thing I learned from Wendy Stevens. And I was so glad that I did it. And so maybe it's a bit cheeky, but I always do it on a holiday Monday week. So oh, I get the holiday.
Same, yeah. And
my Monday students, it took them a few years even. They're like, oh, I didn't realize that group class was always after a holiday weekend. Good call. What I love about it is, one, like at least pre-COVID, families were always gathering. So I'd be like, now you have three pieces at least to perform for everybody. During, just before group class, they were well prepared. And then they've performed for family, and then they come perform for each other, you know, which right now is online. But then I also found for me, it was a great way to sort of sit back and see the students perform for each other. They get ideas from each other. It's a different way to have some creativity. But then of course my teaching hours are reduced for that week. So, you know, there's some prep on like, what game might I play with them, or how am I going to engage them? But it gives me a week of a bit more rest to recharge. And then when I go back to the one-on-ones, I'm like raring to go. And so I find having that periodically throughout the year is a really good way to manage energy. Do you do something similar, Emily?
I do. I like that. I'm nodding my head. My group class like that is next week, so I can't wait. Yeah, they are great. I learned to do that from some amazing colleagues that really know their stuff. And they all taught me. I would show up. I was this green teacher and kind of showing up with a few people under my wing. When I started out, I was trying to have them be in festival. And my kids were wandering all over. They weren't ready. And I would talk to the experienced teachers and I'd say, your students are all ready to go. What's your secret? How are you getting this excellent prep accomplished? Like, do you just browbeat them, or what are you doing? I think that wasn't the answer. Okay. But
no, but I could see how you might think that. Or I mean, like wonder, you ask.
Yeah. they said, oh, you need group class week. You just 2 weeks ahead of whatever event there is, bring them in, and it's their lesson, and they have an internal deadline, and you need to start doing that. It's amazing. Night and day difference. And they were right. I started doing that, and I'll never go back to not doing it. It was hard during COVID, and none of us perform much anyway, except for online things. So yeah, we are in Texas starting to venture back out to the world of distance and safe, but live performances are coming up in the future for us. So that's we're exciting. All like stretching our wings again. Yeah. So yeah. I've actually got to train up some people that have really, they've been in piano maybe a while and they've the COVID newbies, you know, yeah. they've never been through a live one. It'll be new.
Oh, that'll be so nice. That energy will be really good.
Yeah. Tell me more about burnout though. That's like one aspect is changing up your schedule, right? Do you think teachers should be dismayed to find themselves burned out at points? Or I think that when you, even if you get to a low spot, you can always learn a great deal. And like pain is a good teacher in a way. So what's burnout taught you?
Well, a lot of the things we're discussing today, I think it taught me that how important it was to set and enforce clear boundaries and to value and model the value of lesson experience to the families. Like I think you mentioned, should teachers feel dismayed if they feel burnout? And I think, I don't think so. I think sometimes maybe because I felt it a few times that I think it's normal, maybe not. But I think, depending on your life circumstance and what's going on, and sometimes it's just a reminder to pivot or a reminder to look at daily habits, you know, or your habits in general, you know, what could change? How could you be creative?
I like that, Sarah, a signal to change. Yeah. Do you tend to pay attention to the small signals? Are you really alert? Or do you some of us like a big flashing red light, like you better fix this. You're not in a good place. I could say for myself, I've done a little of both.
I'm right there with you on a bit of both. And I think sometimes once you've had the flashing red light, then when you go down that path, you're like, you can see the signs a little sooner, which is good. But I'll be honest. I think sometimes I'll like swerve in that direction a little bit and I don't notice right away. And then I'll look back like, oh, like what's going on? Oh, okay. I need to make some adjustments here. You know, too much going on, too many commitments, or just,
that's good.
You know, a little more caring or better habits, that kind of thing to support what's going on. But I think when we feel those things, you know, I like the image of a magic wand because I worked with a coach once who wasn't a musician. And so she asked the most interesting questions because she didn't have that like pretense of musician, I don't know, experience. Mm-hmm. So she would just say, well, if you waved a magic wand, what would your schedule be? I said, well, it would be 2 to 5 every day. And she said, so? And then I think about 30 days later, that's what my schedule was. Like it was, I was like, what? Okay. You know, and it's not that anymore because it doesn't fit for my family. But at the time, you know, I couldn't believe it. I was like, huh, okay. So sometimes asking those questions without the bias can really make a difference.
Oh, I like that. That is great. Nowadays, I've had lots of traditional experience. I am almost only listen to people outside the music space, like business or just life balance speakers, Seth Godin for marketing a lot. And because I think that's a level of creative thinking. If you want to bring that to your profession, do look outside and hear from outer voices, because they'll bring a perspective you hadn't already chewed on a million times.
Yeah, that's a really, really great point.
I do like connecting in the community, though. I'm always curious about stories, and especially if I'm burned out, I'll get there periodically. You know, it's kind of the teaching year. It's easy at the end of the year to just feel tired out, especially if you performed a lot. There was one year I took on a bunch of gigs and just kind of added that to the top. And that was, you know, you're just so bone tired on Sundays after all working all week and all weekend. But I think burnout's a great teacher and it's a great creative empathy. So I value that. That's one of my life values a lot is, in fact, I think if you want to ask yourself how mature you are, you can say, how good am I at learning lessons from stuff that hurt? And am I being empathetic enough? And that goes to your clients and to your colleagues. I think that's great.
Yeah. I like that, Emily. I think that's very, very true.
What about you? What unusual lessons has it brought up for you?
Well, I like what you said there, you know, and that's been on my mind too, is that if you've perhaps gone in a direction that wasn't the best or made some mistakes, how did you handle them? You know, that's sometimes, you know, the perfectionist in me wants to get everything right the first time. And then I rake myself over the coals if I make a mistake here or there. And then I remind myself, like, no, you know what? Sometimes the real show of character is how you handle the mistake or the pivot, you know? And so then that's when I kind of can hold my head up high and be like, yeah, I'm going to rock this the second time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of the experiment. That's my secret. Every time, Sarah, I'm an introvert and I'm an overthinker. And so I think people like that naturally go to the place where it's like, you want to be a perfectionist maybe, or you don't publish your work without lots of thought beforehand. Mm-hmm. I don't know who's raising their hand right now. when people talk about that kind of, you know, procrastinating because you are a perfectionist, I am always like, my ears perk right up. And I know that to be like one of my challenges. But my workaround with it, I found something that really works. You just said, is just turn that challenge into experimental mode. And you just say, make a little deal with yourself. You're like, okay, for 3 months, short little term, I'll try this. And then it's not forever. I'm not deciding for life. I'm just gonna, like, even a tuition change, if you want to go concrete, you can say, well, okay, this year we're charging this. That, and something I add, I'll make the statement to my clients, like, you know, here's the new tuition package, it's really higher. And I've had to do that before. And I, on the other side of that, that I'm not saying to them, I am like, because I'm closing. If I don't fix the finances, I'm closing this studio. And I'm like, this is an experiment. I'm either going to go for it or I'm going to go home.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's always worked, and it helps you get past it. And then you're like, well, that wasn't so bad. And we succeeded. It's fine. And they're happy. And I'm getting paid when I'm worth it.
Yeah. I like that. And it's good because you can stand up for that at that moment. It's good. And when you have that plan of like, okay, well, worst case, this is what's happening. So that's good too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's multiple. In fact, I think even in that experimental mode, you can always say there is multiple versions of success for me. So I'm going to try this. I'll try to fill my studio for what I want, my schedule, right? And then if you can have that flexibility with yourself, and it's so much easier. I think less burnout comes with that. Instead of being like, if I don't get this, then game over.
That's so stressful. No, yeah, I like
it. If you like work with a coach, I think it still works. Like you've done coaching. I have. I know for myself, I will go in and set like low-hanging fruit. I'm like, I for sure can get these goals done in my business. And then I'll set some like super scary stuff. And then I'm like, I'm not sure. The world might end if we try for that.
Yeah. It's always so fun to set those and to feel that like electricity when you're like, it's so difficult to set. And then that feeling when you achieve it too. Cause I know you have.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me more about that. What's been your scary stuff, or what's the next level thing for you? Or if you were going to hire your own coach, these are personal questions, Sarah.
They're great. Well, I mean, I'll share my first experience with that. Like, because I shared a bit earlier about how my coach had no idea on music education or music stuff. And mm-hmm. the challenges, you know, when she kind of threw out like, oh, well, can't you change your schedule to earlier afternoons? And can't you change your tuition by like 25% or whatever? And I was like I had a physical reaction, you know?
Oh, really?
Oh my goodness. I was like in tears and like sweaty, like what? No. And then, you know, after thinking about it and then being like, okay, yeah. Let's try this. Like you said, experiment. You can always pivot if you need it. And that was a huge game changer, you know? And again, I was in that space where you're just like, you know, you said the low hanging fruit goals and then the like, oh my goodness, the world might end if I miss this one, but let's try it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was one of the biggest ones for my own business, was just making those big shifts. And then following through, you know, was a big sort of transition, but then it made such big transformation in the experience for the clients as well as for me. Like I physically felt different showing up to teach. Have you felt that too? Where like before that point showing up, I was tired and like even felt kind of hunched down and was like, okay, here we are sort of thing. Like, and then after those shifts were made and I was able to like fit in the context of my life with my kids and everything else, I was so excited to teach and I was like sitting up straight and like way more excited. And then of course that's reflected in the client's experience, you know, and how they're showing up and how they're valuing everything. So.
Ooh. Oh, that's so good. Yeah. Your energy changes and everyone in the room knows. That's so good. Yeah. It's worth bothering with the effort of it for sure. Yeah. Oh, I had a moment today. I was dropping my child off for school. He's 10 and I dropped him off and he waved goodbye and he kind of said goodbye like 5 times today. I could tell he was wanting more time with mom. And that's been a pattern this year. He's been saying, mom, I want more time with you. And right now I'm doing a 5-day studio. And so talking about these, like, what is next? What do you want to be true for not just 3 months? Those are the easy ones, right? But where are you trying to go in 5 years or 10 years? And, I'm right here in the beginning of some changes for my hours and studio scope, but it's driven because of my son and because he's been put, you know, mom, where are you? You don't get home till 8 o'clock. It's those things. And, you know, he's 10 and he still wants time with me. So it's funny that that even should be, it seems like a no-brainer, right? Of course you're going to prioritize your child. You should. But then there's things like finances and billable hours, and it's hard to say no, especially if people are dying for a spot in your studio. It's absolutely tough to do. But
and those families for years that have a sibling, like that's always, I find, you know, sometimes it's okay to like not have new signups, but when you have that really excited younger sibling, you're like, oh yes, I'll take you on. Right.
Yeah, that's always a backdoor entry point, isn't it?
Yeah, but I can relate with that experience for sure. I mean, I had a moment, I was looking into my student's eyes and we were having a great time and she's smiling and I missed my children too. And so it was just that reminder, like we've talked a little bit about, sometimes there's those moments that just kind of ting at you and remind you like, okay, it's time to make some slight adjustments so that I'm seeing my own kids more often in the afternoons. And it just means a new adjustment is on the horizon.
Well, I like that. Yeah. I think that's true about you, Sarah. I think that you have finely tuned ears and that I can tell that you pay attention to the small signals, those little nudges that life gives us. And I swear I'm more one of those red flag people. I guess I have to go to my pain level. That's all right though.
He's like saying goodbye at school.
I'm okay with it. Yeah. I had a friend that adopted children from Ethiopia. She's not a musical parent at all, just a friend. And she got the children when they were toddlers. And so, I mean, you know, that's what they wanted, that all this time with their children. And I went to her house. She had this big drinking liter glass jar and it was full of marbles. And I said, what is that? And she said, oh, I put in a marble for every week that I have left with them until they go away to college. And she said, I want to make sure I'm purposeful. You know, it's easy to let the weeks go by so quickly, but here I am. I wanted this and I fought for this to be an adopted parent. I want to visualize what I have and that my time with them means something.
Yeah. And,
I don't have the jar. I think that might break my heart to keep it around. But yeah, it's on my mind. Like that's, somebody said, there was a quote I read recently, all the money in the world never bought a second of time. And so when you think about what are the priorities for your growth and your 5-year picture, boy, that is one of, it's easy to put down like money goals and enrollment goals and stuff on your business growth sheet. But I find it so challenging when you're trying to factor in, you're like, what does 6 p.m. with my family meet, you know, where does that go on the pro con list? Do you make paper lists? What's your process for sorting this out?
I'm glad you brought that up. I've gone through lots of different processes, I think, but I went through an exercise probably about 10 years ago or so, where someone challenged me to write down my top 3 life priorities. What are the top 3 things that are important? And then that became like the filter for all of these things. Like you're asking about the, you know, the family dinner. So, you know, being a wife, being a mom, serving with my gifts, because I think a lot of us feel that that pull to serve with our gifts. And that's where a lot of our businesses are born from. But in for me, in that order, and then using that as a filter to pour everything through.
These are great. I think we could have a couple more podcast episodes, Sarah.
I agree. Yeah. Well, this has been good. And so I think there's so many advantages to sort of taking that time to reflect and to remember that as a business owner, you get to steer your ship and, mm-hmm. you know, and that direction can change every few years, or it can just sort of chug along in the same direction. And so I have so much gratitude for our community of teachers. Like I love connecting with you, Emily, and with other teachers in Top Music Pro and all of the different resources we have to strengthen what it is that we do. So I think we're really lucky that there's that online connection that we can have.
I am too. I think as artists, everyone needs community. And I think as artists, especially, you need to have someone that's not your family, not your spouse, who doesn't want to hear about your business thoughts anymore. you certainly can't confide in your clients. So it's finding the other teachers that can inspire you, or that you might be useful to them. I that's discounted as well. As a teacher, I'm not a beginner anymore. I'm more of a midway teacher. And I have taken that on as, you know, like you start to think the further you get in life, like, what's my legacy? Besides just like piano lessons, what is my legacy? And I think part of it has to be, are you investing in other teachers, or is it all about you? You know, are you, if you're empathetic, are you taking the time to tell someone that and make space for it?
That's beautiful. I love that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being your guest, and it was great. I learned a lot by being a part of this. So I thank you, Sarah.
Oh, and thank you for being here. So did I. This was so much fun. Well, and thanks to all of you listening.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Isn't it great that as independent music teachers, we get to steer our own ship to fit our needs, and we get to make a difference teaching music at the same time? Next week on the podcast, Carlos Pachenko is Tim's guest. He's the YouTube channel manager for Top Music Co., and he'll be talking about building your channel. This episode is over, but if you heard about an event, product, or service and didn't have a chance to write it down, don't worry. We list everything you've heard about in this episode in the show notes, or head to topmusic.co. I'm Sarah Buckley, and you've been listening to the Topcast. See you next time.
For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.